A blue sign hurtles through space toward a green planet. Letters etched into the sign read, Turner. Now a logo of a thick-maned lion framed by a ring of film. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. Black and white titles appear over a relief of a lion. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer presents Greta Garbo in Ninotchka, an Ernst Lubitsch production. Copyright 1939 by Lowe's Incorporated. With Melvin Douglas and Ina Clare. Screenplay by Charles Brackett, Billy Wilder, and Walter Reich. Based on the original story by Melchior Lengel. Musical score by Werner R. Heymann. Art director Cedric Gibbons. Gowns by Adrian. Director of photography William Daniels, ASC. Film editor Gene Ruggiero. Cast: Greta Garbo as Ninotchka. Melvin Douglas as Leon. Ina Clare as Swana. Bela Lugosi as Razinin. Sig Ruman as Ironov. Felix Bressart as Bulyanov. Alexander Grenache as Kopalski. Gregory Gay as Rakonin. Rolf Seiden as the hotel manager. Edwin Maxwell as Mercier. And Richard Carl as Gaston. Directed by Ernst Lubitsch. Now, in black and white, we view the car-filled streets of the Place de la Concorde. Words appear. This picture takes place in Paris, in those wonderful days when a siren was a brunette and not an alarm. And if a Frenchman turned out the light, it was not on account of an air raid. Now, in an elegant hotel, a tuxedoed manager strides across the lobby's polished marble floor. Through a revolving door, a man enters from the street. Dressed in a heavy coat and wool cap, the mustached man's mouth falls open as he takes in the spacious entrance hall. The manager approaches.
Is there anything I can do for you, monsieur?
No.
The stranger leaves, and as the door revolves, a second man enters the lobby. Tall and husky, he wears a heavy coat and fur hat and has a thick goatee.
Yes, monsieur?
Just looking around.
He leaves, and the manager's eyes linger on the revolving door. He does a double take as a third man in a heavy coat and fur hat eyes the lobby. Remaining in the door, the man completes one revolution and with a wide grin joins the first two men on the sidewalk.
Comrades, why should we lie to each other? It's wonderful.
Let's be honest. Have we anything like it in Russia?
No.
Can you imagine what the beds would be in a hotel like that?
They tell me when you ring once, the valet comes in. When you ring twice, you get a waiter. And do you know what happens when you ring three times? A maid comes in. A French maid.
Comrades, if we ring nine times, let's go in.
Just a minute. I have nothing against the idea, but I still say let's go back to the hotel terminals. Moscow made our reservations there. We are on an official mission, and we have no right to change the orders of our superiors.
Where's your courage, Comrade Bulyanov?
Are you the Bulyanov who fought on the barricades? And now you are afraid to take a room with a bath?
I don't want to go to Siberia.
And I don't want to go to the hotel terminals.
And I don't want to go to Siberia.
Bulyanov climbs into a taxi. The others get in, too.
Listen to me.
Look, Bulyanov. If Lenin were alive, he would say, Bulyanov, comrade, for once in your life you were in Paris. Don't be a fool. Go in there and drink three times.
He wouldn't say that. What he would say is, Bulyanov, you can't afford to live in a cheap hotel. Doesn't the prestige of the Bolsheviks mean anything to you? Do you want to live in a hotel where you press for the hot water and cold water comes? And when you press for the cold water, nothing comes at all. Foy, Bulyanov.
I still say our place is for the common people. But who am I to contradict Lenin? Let's go in.
In the hotel lobby, they approach the manager.
Are you the manager?
Yes, monsieur.
Pardon me for introducing Comrade Ironov. Member of the Russian Board of Trade.
Monsieur.
This is Comrade Kopalski.
Monsieur.
And I'm Comrade Bulyanov.
Monsieur.
May I ask you how much your rooms are?
Well, gentlemen, I'm afraid our rates are rather high.
Why should you be afraid?
The manager points to their large valise.
Is there some more luggage?
Oh, yes. But have you a safe big enough to hold this?
I'm afraid we have no boxes of that size in the vault, but there's a suite with a private safe.
That's even better.
But, gentlemen, I'm afraid...
He's always afraid.
I just wanted to explain. The apartment may suit your convenience, but I doubt whether it'll fit your convictions. It's the royal suite.
Royal suite?
Oh.
Just a minute. comrades. I warn you, if it gets out in Moscow that we stay in the royal suite, we'll get into terrible trouble.
We just tell him he had to do it on account of the safe. That's a perfect excuse. There was no other safe big enough.
That's right.
That's fine. Yes. That's right. But of course, we could take out the pieces and distribute them in three or four boxes in the vault and take a small room. That's an idea, isn't it?
Yes, that's an idea. But who said we have to have an idea?
That's right. That's
very good, very good. Give us the royal suite.
Step this way, please.
Later, in the royal suite, Ironov, Bulyanov, and Kapolsky slide the double-handled valise into a wall safe. In an adjoining room, a waiter sets an elegant table while cautiously eyeing the Russians. Ironov, the tall Russian with a goatee, plucks a roll from the table, then strides to a telephone on a desk.
Hello? Please connect me with Mercier. Yes, the jeweler.
The waiter stiffens and eavesdrops.
Hello? No, I want to speak to Monsieur Mercier personally. Yes. Hello, Monsieur Mercier. This is Ironov, member of the Russian Board of Trade. Yes, we arrived this morning. Oh, thank you very, very much. Yes, we have everything here. The necklace, too. All 14 pieces. What? No, Monsieur Mercier. The core jewels of the Grand Duchess Svana consisted of 14 pieces. Why don't you check on that?
The waiter leaves the suite and goes to the kitchen.
Necessary credentials.
Will you take care of the royal suite? I'll be back in 10 minutes.
All right, Rakone.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
He goes to a taxi.
Eight rue du Chalon.
Yeah, monsieur.
Now a chauffeured car arrives at 8 rue du Chalon. A man steps out dressed in a pinstriped suit. Trim and athletic, he has a pencil-thin mustache and wears his hair slicked back. In a posh apartment, he joins an elegant blonde woman who gazes into a hand mirror. She wears a fur-collared dressing gown and pearls.
Hello, Leon.
Morning, Svana, darling.
Oh, it's really a wretched morning. Wretched. I can't get myself right. I wanted to look mellow and I look brittle. My face doesn't compose well. It's all highlights. How can I dim myself down, Leon? Suggest something. Oh, I'm so bored with this face. I wish I had someone else's face. Whose face would you have if you had your choice? Oh, well, I guess one gets the face one deserves.
There's one marvelous advantage to your conversation, Svana. However many questions you ask, you never expect an answer.
Don't you find that restful? Mm-hmm. Good morning, darling.
They kiss.
Morning.
Why didn't you come last night?
Darling, I was looking after your interests.
What did you win?
We can forget horse racing, roulette, and everything. Our worries are over. You remember the platinum watch with the diamond numbers? You'll be in a position to give it to me now.
Oh, darling, you're so good to me.
We can be rich if you say the word. I had dinner with the Guizots last night.
Oh, those awful newspaper people.
You'd be surprised how many nice people dined with the Guizots.
What a gruesome proof of the power of the press.
Now listen, Swan. I sold Mr. Guizot the idea of publishing your memoirs in the Gazette Parisienne.
What?
The life and loves of the Grand Duchess Svana of Russia.
Oh, Leon.
But, darling, we won't have to worry about our future if you're willing to raffle off your past.
Come in.
A maid enters through tall French doors.
Count Rakonin asks the privilege of a few words, Your Highness.
Rakonin?
Yes, he's a waiter at the Clarence, poor devil. You know him.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Tell him I'm sorry. I won't be able to see him for half an hour.
The Count says if it could be as soon as possible. It's luncheon time and he's just between courses.
All right, I'll see him right away. But I can't get myself right today.
Count Rakonin's between courses. Oh.
She kisses Leon and goes into another room, where she meets Rakonin, the waiter from the hotel.
How do you do, my friend?
Your Highness.
Would you sit down?
Your Highness, forgive this intrusion.
What's the matter, Rakonin? Have you lost your job?
No, madame, something of the utmost importance. It concerns your jewels.
My jewels?
I remember one birthday of His Majesty, our beloved Tsar. I had the honor of being on guard at the Summer Palace. I still see you bending before His Majesty. You wore your diadem and the necklace.
But why do you bring this up after all these years?
They are here. Your jewels here in Paris.
Alexis, do you know what you're saying?
This morning, three Soviet agents arrived. I overheard a telephone conversation with Mercier, the jeweler. Your Highness, they're going to sell him.
Did I hear something about jewels?
Rakonin, bless him, has just given me the most amazing news. You know, Count Dalgo. I must call my lawyer at once.
I'm sorry, Your Highness, I have to leave.
Oh, thank you, my dear friend. I'll get in touch with you.
Au revoir.
Hello, Balzac 2769.
Au revoir, monsieur.
Au revoir.
Rakonin leaves.
This is the Grand Duchess Svana. I want to speak to Monsieur Cornillon. It's very important. Please get him right away. Hello, Monsieur Cornillon. The most incredible thing has happened. My jewels are here in Paris. Three Bolshevik swine are trying to sell them. Yes. Yes. Now we must act immediately. Call the police. Have them arrested. Oh, no, get an injunction. But do something, Monsieur Cornillon. But they are my jewels. There must be some way of getting them back.
What does he say?
But how can there be a question? Are you my lawyer or theirs?
She nods.
Oh. It's all right. Yes, all right. I'll call you later.
What do you say?
Oh, it looks pretty hopeless. There may be a chance, that's all. The French government has recognized Soviet Russia, and he doubts if they will risk a war for my poor sake. He might be able to make up some kind of a case, but it would cost money. Money, money, that's all they're interested in, those lawyers.
Darling, calm down, calm down. Why do you need a lawyer? Haven't you your little vulgar boatman?
Now in the royal suite, Mercier inspects the jewels.
Very good. Excellent. Superb. It'd be foolish to belittle the quality of the merchandise, but your terms are impossible. My counteroffer is the absolute maximum.
But, Monsieur Mercier...
Now, gentlemen, I'm going to let you in on a little secret. We're undertaking this deal only because of the prestige involved. And, frankly, we're expected to take a loss.
Capitalistic methods. Mm. They accumulate millions by taking loss after loss.
This is Bulyanov, Ironov, and Kopalski. Who? Count Algu? No, that must be a mistake. No, we can't be disturbed.
I can assure you that no one else can meet the figure named by my syndicate, at least not under the present economic conditions.
We can wait.
Do we give the impression of people who are pressed for money?
Yes. Calm, gentlemen. Let's put our cards on the table. Right now, there's a Russian commission in New York trying to sell 15 Rembrandts. There's another in London, mortgaging the oil fields in Baku. You need money, and you need it quickly. Now, I think my offer is a very fair one and doesn't even take advantage of your situation.
Just a minute.
The three comrades shuffle out and confer in the next room.
Now listen, we have just a minute.
Bulyanov turns back to Mercier.
The pieces are all registered.
Oh, I know. Thank you so much.
Bulyanov returns.
He's cutting our throat.
What can we do? We have to accept.
Comrades, comrades, don't let's give in so quickly. After all, we have to uphold the prestige of Russia.
All right, let's uphold it for another 10 minutes.
They nod in agreement. Ironov opens one of the suite's massive French doors. Leon steps in.
We don't want to be disturbed.
My name is Dalgu. I telephone.
If you want to see us, you must come in later.
Leon pushes past him.
You can't come in here.
Monsieur Mercier, may I introduce myself? I'm Leon Dalgu. I think I had the pleasure of meeting you in your beautiful shop. I was admiring the platinum watch with the diamond numbers.
Yes, of course.
Leon eyes the jewels.
Oh, glorious, aren't they?
No, monsieur, you have
no
right.
I did not permit you to come in here.
Just a moment. I hope you haven't closed this deal, Monsieur Mercier. It might bring you into serious
trouble. Who are you and what do you want?
Those jewels are the property of the Grand Duchess Swana and were seized illegally by the Soviet government. I am acting for Her Highness. Here is my power of attorney.
You know, Monsieur Mercier, this is all nonsense.
These may have been the jewels of the Grand Duchess Swana, but like all private property, they were confiscated by the state.
We'll leave the problem of their ownership to the French courts. In the meanwhile, gentlemen, I filed a petition for an injunction to prohibit you from either selling or removing the jewels. Here is a copy. If there's anything in the petition which isn't clear, gentlemen, I should be glad to explain it.
Mercier.
Thank you. Well, gentlemen, this introduces a new element into our negotiations. Until this claim is completely settled...
We can call our ambassador.
I give you my word, they were confiscated legally.
That's right.
Gentlemen, please try to understand my position. I'm not withdrawing. My offer stands. And when you can produce a clear title approved by the French courts, we can close the deal. Until then, gentlemen, good day.
Leon sees him out.
I thought it my duty to warn you. I should hate to see you get into trouble, monsieur.
Thank you.
I hope you will forgive me.
On the contrary, I consider myself very lucky. Good day.
Good day, monsieur.
Cigarette in hand, Leon sits down.
Well, he can't.
Well, gentlemen, how about a little lunch?
Will you get out of here?
Get out.
Well, don't look so gloomy, gentlemen. You may have a chance.
We may have a chance.
Ridiculous.
Yes, a very slim one. I want to be fair. I don't deny that you might make out some kind of a case.
We haven't anything to discuss with you. No. We'll talk to a lawyer.
A lawyer?
Yes.
Lawyer.
All right. You talk to a lawyer and I'll talk to a judge.
That won't help you. You can't intimidate us.
Soviet Russia will put all its might behind this case.
Yes. You think because you represent the former Grand Duchess...
The Grand Duchess.
The former Grand Duchess.
At any rate, gentlemen, a charming, exquisite woman. I warn you, gentlemen, if this case comes to trial, it'll be before a French court. And when the Grand Duchess takes the stand...
All right, go ahead, get on the witness stand. What can she say?
But how will she look? The fashions this spring are very becoming to her. Oh, gentlemen, the judge will be French. The jury will be French. Everybody in the courtroom will be French. Have you ever seen a French court when a beautiful woman sits in the witness stand and raises her skirt a little? You sit down and pull up your pants and where would get you?
The comrades gape.
I suppose you expect us to hand over the jewels, huh?
Oh, no, I'm not a highwayman. Just a nuisance. All I want to do is to make things as difficult as possible.
Not that we are giving in one inch, but tell us what is in your mind.
Yeah.
Well, gentlemen, what about my proposition?
What proposition?
I just said let's have some lunch.
Now two waiters stride down a hallway, carrying silver platters at chest height, each topped with an elaborately garnished dish. They enter the royal suite, and our view remains in the hallway as the door closes behind them. Now a young woman wearing a short black French maid's dress carries a tray of cigarettes. Our view remains in the hallway as she enters the suite and closes the door. One of the waiters opens the door and strides down the hallway. The cigarette girl quickly follows him out of the suite. With hurried steps, she heads for a staircase, fixing her hair. Later, a departing waiter holds the suite's door open for another waiter, who delivers three bottles of champagne. Soon after, the cigarette girl returns, followed by two more cigarette girls. With wide smiles and bouncing curls, the three pretty women enter the suite. Inside the suite, Kopalski sleeps on the floor with an empty glass in his hand. Bulyanov embraces a smiling cigarette girl, and the other girls flirt with Ironov. Leon works at a writing desk.
Hey, Sasha! Sergei! Misha!
The comrades stumble to him.
What can we do for you?
Just about that telegram to Moscow. Why should you bother about it? I've written it for you.
Oh, Leon, Leonichka, why are you so good to us?
They smother him with kisses.
That's very nice, boys. Now, wait a minute, boys. What was the name of that commissar of the Board of Trade?
Razinin.
Commissar Razinin, Board of Trade, Moscow.
You wouldn't like Razinin.
No, he's a bad man. He sends people to Siberia.
We don't like Razinin.
No, we don't like Leon. Don't we like Leon
stands and points to his telegram.
Wait a minute. How's this? Commissar Razinin, Board of Trade, Moscow. Unexpected situation here. Grand Duchess Swana in Paris claims jewels and has already brought injunction against sale or removal. After long and serious study, we suggest, in the interest of our beloved country, a 50-50 settlement is best solution. Ironov, Bulyanov, and Kopalski.
If he says that, Leon will be sent to Siberia.
And if we have to go to Siberia...
I'll send you a muff.
Leon, why are you so good to us?
A waiter brings more champagne.
Comrade waiter! Waiter, Rotchka, dear waiter.
Why are you so good to us?
They embrace the waiter, Count Rakonin, and kiss him. Leon shoos them away.
Enough.
Take this to the telegraph office at once.
Yes, monsieur.
Count Rakonin leaves with the telegram. Now, two fur hats and a woolen cap hang on a hat rack. Magically, they transform into bowlers and a top hat. Later, the comrades return to their suite wearing the new hats and fancy suits. Ironov answers the phone.
Hello. Yes, Leon. What is it, Leon? Oh, you can't hurry such things. You must give Moscow a little time. There's nothing we can do about it. Why don't you drop in later? Yeah. Au revoir.
The others rush in.
What's the matter? There's
a telegram from Moscow. It must have been here all day.
Halt negotiations immediately. Envoy extraordinary arrives Thursday, 5:20 p.m. with full power. Your authority cancelled here with Razinin. It is Thursday.
It's 5 o'clock already.
I always said it would be Siberia.
Ironov picks up the phone.
Give me the desk, please. This is the royal suite, Ironov speaking. Listen, a special envoy is coming from Moscow today. He'll occupy the royal suite. Move our things to the smallest room you've got. Yes, right away, instantly.
He runs out of the suite. Later, at the train station, Ironov, Bulyanov, and Kopalski, dressed in modest wool suits, scan the passengers on the platform.
Oh, this is a fine thing. Maybe we've missed him already.
How can we find somebody without knowing what he looks like?
With their eyes wide, they walk together through the departing crowd. Ironov points and grins.
That must be the one.
Yes, he looks like a comrade.
They follow the man, but stop short as he greets a blonde woman with a stiff-armed salute.
Hi, Hitler.
They embrace.
No, that's not him.
Positively not.
What are we going to do?
I don't know.
What is this?
Another man glares at them as he walks past.
We must have missed him.
They notice a tall, square-shouldered woman wearing a drab raincoat and hat. She stares at the Russians with a thin-lipped frown. Then she approaches them, carrying a bag in each hand.
I'm looking for Michael Simonovich Ironov.
I am Michael Simonovich Ironov.
I'm Nina Ivanovna Yakushova, envoy extraordinary, acting on the direct orders of Comrade Commissar Rosinin. Present with your colleagues.
Comrade Bulyanov.
Comrade.
Comrade Kopalsky.
Comrade.
What a charming idea for Moscow to surprise us with a lady, comrade.
If we had known, we would have greeted you with flowers.
Don't make an issue of my womanhood. We're here for work, all of us. Let's not waste any time. Shall we go?
Porter.
Here, please.
A porter steps up.
What do you want?
May I have your bags, madame?
Why?
He's a porter. He wants to carry them.
Why? Why should you carry other people's bags?
Well, that's my business, madame.
That's no business. That's social injustice.
That depends on the tip.
Allow me, comrade.
No, no, thank you.
Carrying both of her bags, Ninotchka leaves, with the others in tow.
How are things in Moscow?
Very good. The last mass trials were a great success. There are going to be fewer but better Russians.
Later, in the hotel lobby, they stare at a showcase which displays a fashionable cone-shaped hat.
What's that?
It's a hat, comrade. A woman's hat.
How can such a civilization survive which permits their women to put things like that on their heads? Won't be long now, comrades.
They enter the luxurious royal suite.
This is the apartment we have reserved for you, Comrade Yakushova. I hope you like it.
She looks around the parlor.
Which part of the room is mine?
You see, comrade, it's a little different here. They don't rent rooms in pieces. We had to take the whole suite.
She picks up one of her bags, strides across the room, and through a set of tall doors. Glancing around, she continues into the bedroom, where she gazes at a chandelier and the gilt tracery on the walls.
How much does this cost?
2,000 francs.
A week?
A day.
Do you know how much a cow costs, Comrade Ironov?
A cow?
2,000 francs. If I stay here a week, I will cost the Russian people 7 cows. Who am I to cost the Russian people 7 cows?
We had to take it on account of the safe.
For ourselves, we are much happier now since we moved to a little room right next to the servants' quarters.
I'm ashamed to put the picture of Lenin in a room like this.
You want to be alone, comrade?
No.
She unpacks a typewriter.
Comrades, your telegram was received with great disfavor in Moscow.
We did our best, comrade.
I hope so, for your sake. Let's examine the case. What does the lawyer say?
Which lawyer?
You didn't get legal advice.
We dealt directly with the representative of the Grand Duchess. I am sure if we call him, he will give you a very clear picture.
I will not repeat your mistake. I will have no dealings with the Grand Duchess nor her representative.
Ironov, Bulyanov, and Kopolsky watch nervously as she types.
Comrade Bulyanov.
Yes, comrade.
Do you spell Bulyanov with one or two F's?
With two F's, if you please.
Have you some cigarettes?
Ironov checks his pockets, then picks up the phone.
This is the royal suite. Please send up some cigarettes. Yes.
He grins.
You just telephone and you get what you want. That's the capitalistic system.
Comrades, I'm not in a position to pass final judgment, but at best you've been careless in your duty to the state. You were entrusted with more than a mere sale of jewelry. Why are we peddling our precious possessions to the world at this time? Our next year's crop is in danger and you know it. Unless we can get foreign currency to buy tractors, there'll not be enough bread for our people and you, comrades.
We did it with the best intentions.
We can't feed the Russian people on your intentions. 50% to a so-called Grand Duchess. Half of every loaf of bread to our enemy. Comrade Kobalski.
Yes, comrade.
Go at once to our embassy and get me the address of the best lawyer in Paris.
Yes, comrade.
And you, Comrade Ivanov. Go to the public library and get me the section of the civil code on property.
Is there anything I can do, comrade?
Yes. You might get me an accurate map of Paris. I want to use my spare time to inspect public utilities and to make a study of all outstanding technical achievements in the city.
Yes, comrade.
Come in.
The cigarette girls scamper into the suite.
Hello, hello, cigarettes. Hello. Hello.
Their bright smiles fade. The three comrades gaze sheepishly at Ninotchka.
Comrades, you must have been smoking a lot.
Later in the lobby.
Desk?
Yes, Monsieur Kopalsky. You're expecting Count Dalgou,
But he's not to go to the Royal Suite under any circumstances. You should go to your new room, 985. Thank you, monsieur.
Now Ninotchka leaves the hotel. From the opposite side of the street, Leon strides toward the hotel. The traffic resumes, and Leon and Ninotchka stop, stranded on an island in the middle of the street. Ninotchka, dressed in a plain coat and beret, stoically watches the cars, then turns to Leon.
You, please.
Me?
Could you give me some information?
Oh, gladly.
How long must we wait here?
Well, until the policeman blows his whistle again.
At what intervals does he whistle?
What?
How many minutes between the first and second whistle?
You know, that's very funny. I never thought of that before.
You've never been caught in a similar situation?
Yes, I have. Now that I come to think about it, it's staggering. Good heavens, if I add it all up, I must have spent years waiting for signals. Imagine, an important part of my life wasted between whistles.
In other words, you don't know?
No.
Thank you.
Well, you're welcome.
Leon tips his hat and gazes at her somber face. He circles a stone pillar standing between them. Wearing a sly grin, he peers over her shoulder and watches her unfold a street map.
Can I be of any assistance to you?
You might hold this for me.
I'd love to.
Correct me if I'm wrong. We are facing north, aren't we?
Facing north? Well, now, I'd hate to commit myself without my compass. Pardon me, are you an explorer?
No, I'm looking for the Eiffel Tower.
Good heavens, is that thing lost again? Oh, are you interested in a view?
I'm interested in the Eiffel Tower from a technical standpoint.
Technical? No, I'm afraid I couldn't be of much help from that angle. You see, a Parisian only goes to the tower in moments of despair to jump off.
How long does it take a man to land?
Now, isn't that too bad? The last time I jumped, I forgot to time it. Let me see now. The Eiffel Tower. Your finger, please.
Why do you need my finger?
It's bad manners to point with your own.
He points her finger.
There. The Eiffel Tower.
And where are we?
Where are we? Now, let me see. Where are we? Here we are. There you are, and here am I. Feel it?
I'm interested only in the shortest distance between these two points. Must you flirt?
Well, I don't have to, but I find it natural.
Suppress it.
I'll try.
For my own information, would you call your approach toward me typical of the local morale?
Mademoiselle, it is that approach which has made Paris what it is.
You're very sure of yourself, aren't you?
Well, nothing's happened recently to shake my self-confidence.
I have heard of the arrogant male in capitalistic society. It is having a superior earning power that makes you that way.
A Russian. I love Russians. Comrade, I've been fascinated by your 5-year plan for the last 15 years.
Your type will soon be extinct.
She walks away, leaving Leon in a wide-eyed daze.
Taxi!
Evening. Ninotchka arrives at the Eiffel Tower. She pauses to read a sign, then steps up to a small booth and buys a ticket at the window. Dressed in a dark skirt and double-breasted coat, the tall, broad-shouldered Russian walks with a purposeful gait. She glances at the interlaced iron beams of the tower, then confronts a uniformed guard.
Can you tell me the exact width of the foundation on which these piers are resting and the depth?
You don't have to worry. The thing is safe.
I'm not afraid.
The foundation is 141 yards square. I hope you'll forgive me, but I thought you
would. Go on.
Leon reads from a booklet.
Four massive pieces of masonry are sunk to a depth of 46 feet on the side of the Seine and 29 and one-half feet on the other side. The girders of interlaced ironwork which stay the structure have an inclination of 54 degrees.
That's a strange angle.
Yes, very strange. Ascending to the first platform is a staircase consisting of 829 steps. And an additional 254 steps to the very top. There's an elevator included in the price of admission.
He looks up.
It'll take you hours to walk up there. The elevator will get you out in 3 minutes.
Ninotchka ascends the spiral staircase, 2 steps at a time. At the top of the tower, Leon gets out of the elevator. Dressed in a black suit, bow tie, and a Hamburg hat, he peers curiously down the stairway. With a smug smile, he strides out to an open viewing deck. He steps over to a railing, and his mouth drops open. Ninotchka gazes out at the twinkling lights of Paris.
You gave me some very valuable information. Thank you.
Thank you for getting me up here. I've never seen this before. Beautiful, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
I'm glad I saw it before becoming extinct.
Now, don't misunderstand me. I do not hold your frivolity against you. As basic material, you may not be bad, but you are the unfortunate product of a doomed culture. I feel very sorry for you.
Ah, but you must admit that this doomed old civilization sparkles. Look at it. It glitters.
I do not deny its beauty, but it's a waste of electricity.
What a city. There are the Grand Boulevards, blasted out of the heart of the old city. The Arc de Triomphe, built to greet Napoleon's army. The opera. Montparnasse, Montmartre. And now, I'll show you the greatest attraction of all. It'll cost me a franc, but it's worth it. The most unique spot in all Paris. Really, I'm not exaggerating. It's wonderful. It's charming. Please.
He focuses a telescope. Ninotchka peers into the eyepiece.
What do you see?
I see a house. Looks like any other house. What's remarkable about it?
Well, it's not the structure. It's the spirit that dwells within it. It has three rooms and a kitchenette dedicated to hospitality.
So it's your house?
Well, let's say I live in it. It's such a pleasant little place. It has all the comforts. Easy to reach near the subway, bus, and streetcar.
Does it mean you want me to go there?
Oh, now, please don't misunderstand me.
Then you don't want me to go there?
No. I didn't say that either. Naturally, nothing would please me more.
Then why don't we go? You might be an interesting subject of study.
I'll do my best.
Later, they arrive at Leon's house. An elderly butler in white tie and tails greets them in the foyer.
Good evening, Gaston.
Good evening, monsieur.
Is this what you call the butler?
Yes.
Good evening, comrade. This man is very old. You shouldn't make him work.
He takes good care of that.
He looks sad. Do you whip him?
No, but the mere thought makes my mouth water.
The day will come when you'll be free. Go to bed, little father. We want to be alone.
Please.
Gaston follows him.
Come, Dago. There have been several telephone calls.
Go to bed, little father.
Leon slides the doors closed between them. In the lamplit study, Leon plucks Ninotchka's map from between her lapels, then slips the coat off her shoulders. Underneath, Ninotchka wears a long, loose-fitting blouse with a belt. Leon lifts off her beret.
Now, may I offer you a drink?
Thank you, I'm not thirsty.
Perhaps something to eat.
I've had all the calories necessary for today.
Oh, yes, all the calories.
What do we do now?
Shall we have some music?
Is that customary?
It helps. It has ever since King David wooed Bathsheba with his harp. Not being so fortunate as to have my harp at hand, I'll turn on the radio.
With her lips drawn in a frown, Ninotchka studies Leon's writing desk and bookshelf.
If there's anything you'd like to study, please go ahead. I have nothing to conceal. This is my desk, these are my books, and here am I. Where shall we begin?
I will start with you.
Excellent. Now, let's see. I'm 35 years old, just over 6 feet tall, and weigh 182 pounds stripped.
What is your profession?
My profession? Keeping my body fit, keeping my mind alert, and keeping the landlord appeased. That's a full-time job.
And what do you do for mankind?
For mankind? Yes, not so much for mankind. But for womankind, my record isn't quite so bleak.
You are something we do not have in Russia.
Thank you.
That's why I believe in the future of my country.
Yeah.
Leon hesitates, then smiles and gazes at her smooth, straight features.
I'm beginning to believe in it myself since I met you. I still don't quite know what it's all about. Confuses me. Frightens me. But it fascinates me. Ninotchka, you like me just a little bit?
Your general appearance is not distasteful.
Thank you.
The whites of your eyes are clear. Your cornea is excellent.
Leon gulps.
Your cornea is terrific. Ninotchka, tell me, you're so expert on things. Can it be that I'm falling in love with you?
Why must you bring in wrong values? Love is a romantic designation for a most ordinary biological, or shall we say, chemical process. A lot of nonsense is talked and written about it.
Oh, I see.
What do you use instead?
I acknowledge the existence of a natural impulse common to all.
What can I possibly do to encourage such an impulse in you?
You don't have to do a thing. Chemically, we're already quite sympathetic.
You're the most incredible creature I've ever met. Ninotchka. Ninotchka.
You'll repeat yourself.
Yes, I'd like to say it 1,000 times. You must forgive me if I seem a little old-fashioned, but after all, I'm just a poor bourgeois.
It's never too late to change. I used to belong to the petty bourgeoisie myself.
No.
My father and mother wanted me to stay and work on the farm, but I prefer the bayonet.
The bayonet? Did you really?
I was wounded before Warsaw.
Wounded? How?
I was a sergeant in the 3rd Cavalry Brigade. Would you like to see my wound?
I'd love to.
She throws her head forward, lifts her hair, and shows him the nape of her neck.
A Polish lancer. I was 16.
Poor Ninotchka, poor Ninotchka.
Don't pity me. Pity the Polish lancer. After all, I'm still alive.
What kind of a girl are you, anyway?
Just what you see. A tiny cog in the great wheel of evolution.
You're the most adorable cog I've ever seen. Ninotchka, let me confess something. Never did I dream I could feel like this toward a sergeant. Did you hear that?
They glance at Leon's wall clock.
It's 12 o'clock.
It's midnight. Look at the clock. One hand has met the other hand. They kiss. Isn't that wonderful?
That's the way a clock works. What's wonderful about it?
But Ninotchka, it's midnight. One half of Paris is making love to the other half.
You merely feel you must put yourself in a romantic mood to add to your exhilaration.
But I can't possibly think of any better reason.
That's false sentimentality.
Oh, you analyze everything out of existence. You'd analyze me out of existence, but I won't let you. Love isn't so simple, Ninotchka. Ninotchka, why do doves bill and coo? Why do snails, the coldest of all creatures, circle interminably around each other? Why do moths fly hundreds of miles to find their mates? Why do flowers slowly open their petals? Oh, Ninotchka, Ninotchka, surely you feel some slight symptom of the divine passion. A general warmth in the palms of your hands. A strange heaviness in your limbs. A burning of the lips that isn't thirst, but something 1,000 times more tantalizing, more exalting than thirst.
You're very talkative.
Leon meets her shrewd glare, then grips her shoulders and presses his lips to hers. As they separate, Ninotchka's eyes droop.
Was that talkative?
No, that was restful. Again.
Sitting on the floor against a stuffed chair, Leon leans close for a long kiss.
Thank you.
Oh, my barbaric Ninotchka. My impossible, unromantic, statistical...
Ninotchka pushes him back against the chair and kisses him. Leon lies, breathless.
Again.
The telephone is ringing.
Let it ring.
One of your friends may be in need of you. You must answer.
Oh.
Leon crawls to his feet, then sits at his desk.
Dear. Hello. Yes? What? Oh, yes. Well, I'm sorry. I couldn't make it. No, I ran into an old friend from the army. What? The whole deal's off. Are you crazy, Bulyanov? Oh, a special envoy arrived.
Ninotchka listens.
Hmm? I'll be glad to see her whenever she wants to. She doesn't want to see me. What do you know about that? Why? Uh-huh. Well, I'll get in touch with her myself. What's her name? Huh? Yaku... Good heavens, these Russian names. How do you spell it? I... Oh, why?
Ninotchka takes his pen and writes the name for him.
Yakushova. Thanks.
His eyes widen. Ninotchka collects her coat and hat.
Yakushova Ninotchka. Yes, all right, thank you.
Leon hangs up the phone, and with his gaze fixed on Ninotchka, crosses the room as she buttons her coat.
Ninotchka.
I must go.
Or shall I say special envoy, Yakushova?
Let's forget we ever met.
No. I have a much better suggestion. Let's forget the telephone ever rang. I never heard that you're Yakushova. Your Ninotchka. My Ninotchka.
I was sent here by my country to fight you.
All right, fight me. Fight me as much as you want. Only fight me tomorrow morning. There's nothing sweeter than sharing a secret with an enemy.
You represent White Russia and I represent Red Russia.
No, no, tonight let's not represent anybody but ourselves.
That's out of the question. If you wish to approach me...
You know I want to.
Then do it through my lawyer.
But Ninotchka, you can't walk out like this. I'm crazy about you. I thought I'd made an impression on you. You like the white of my eye.
I must go.
But Ninotchka, I held you in my arms. You kissed me.
I kissed a Polish lancer, too. Before he died.
She looks into his eyes, then turns and leaves. Daytime. The Grand Duchess Swanna, wearing a sleek tailored suit, talks on the phone.
Yes, Marianne, darling. No, you didn't waken me. I'm not only up, I'm on my way out. Yes, I want to catch Leon before he rushes out and loses himself in my business affairs. Oh, everything was going perfectly until 3 days ago when some horrid female envoy arrived from Moscow. Now we don't know where we are. Yes, well, I'll telephone you tonight, darling. Goodbye.
Now in the royal suite.
I seem to remember some additional injunctive provision dealing with the property of foreigners residing in France.
You are referring to paragraph 59B, section 25F of the Civil Code.
Her lawyer opens a book.
Page 824. And do not fail to read three footnotes. While you're studying it, I will eat.
She goes down to the lobby, where she stops in front of the showcase. Wearing a somber frown, she gazes at the fashionable woman's hat on display and shakes her head. Outside, Ninotchka approaches a taxi and bends down to the window.
Where to, madame?
Can you recommend a restaurant?
Well, there's Grunier, if you care for seafood.
Where do you eat?
At Père Mathieu.
Where is that?
It's just a place for workmen.
Where is it?
Down 8 blocks, Rue de Poivelle.
Thank you.
She waves and strides down the sidewalk, passing a chauffeured car. In its back seat, Leon watches her with a grin. Ninotchka arrives at the local bistro, and a robust waiter greets her with a smile.
Are you alone, madame? A nice little corner table. Or perhaps by the window would be better. This way, madame.
He leads her past a display of fresh breads and long baguettes to a table with a checkered tablecloth.
I think this is the first time you've been in my little place. Your face is new to me. Now, what shall it be?
Raw beets and carrots.
Madame, this is a restaurant, not a meadow. Now, here's what we are offering today. Please make your choice. I'm sure you will find something to tempt your appetite.
Leon walks in, dressed in a handsome three-piece suit. He scans the patrons, mostly men, wearing collared shirts, vests, and soft caps. He finds Ninotchka and doffs his hat.
Well, for goodness sake, hello. It certainly is a small world, isn't it?
He sits at the next table as the waiter returns.
Well, madame, shall we start with soup? Fish soup today. I got up at 5 to fish them from the Seine.
Ah, crawfish soup for me.
Very well, monsieur. Then may I suggest an omelette with mushrooms?
Bring me something simple. I never think about food.
Madame, if you don't think about food, what do you think about?
The future of the common people.
That's also a question of food. I will bring you a nice little lunch à la Père Mathieu.
He turns to Leon's table and clears away dirty dishes. Leon chews some bread until the waiter leaves, then leans over to Ninotchka.
May I say something? You insulted him, you know that? You hurt his feelings. It was just like telling a musician that you don't like music. Why, that good old man believes in food just as you believe in Karl Marx. You can't go around hurting people like that, Comrade Yakushova.
He scoots closer.
But you can make it up to him, you know how? By eating everything that he brings you with relish. By drinking everything with gusto, by having a good time for the first time in your natural life.
I don't like you following me.
I didn't follow you.
How did you get here?
I always eat here.
This is a place for working men.
But, my dear child, I'm most at home among working men. I hate those places where you circulate, the Clarence Hotel and those places. This is my natural element. After all, what are any of us? Working men. At least those of us who are worth our salt.
He waves to the man eating lunch.
Hiya!
Hey!
Hiya, boy!
With a toothy grin, he pats one of them on the back, then sits down just as the waiter returns.
Well, great bunch of fellas. Ah, my friend, I'm happy to see you again.
I'm always glad to meet a new customer, and I hope this first visit will not be your last one.
He's just an old man. His memory's weak.
What are you after?
Must one always be after something?
Your tactics are useless. I'm not Bulyanov, Ironov, or Kopalsky.
Oh, Ninotchka, why must we talk business? If you win the suit, fine. If we win the suit, better. You do me an injustice. Inochka, when we first went to my apartment, did I have the slightest idea that you were connected with this deal?
You know now. And I know now that you're a man who employs business methods, which in Russia would be punished by death.
Oh, death. Death, always so glum. What about life, Ninochka? Do Russians never think about life? Of the moment in which we're living? The only moment we ever really have? Oh, Ninochka, don't take things so seriously. Nothing's worth it, really. Please, relax. I beg you, Sergeant. Smile.
What?
Will you smile?
Why?
Well, just smile.
At what?
At anything. At the whole ridiculous spectacle of life, at people being so serious, taking themselves pompously, exaggerating their own importance. If you can't think of anything else to laugh at, you can laugh at you and me.
Why?
Because we're an odd couple.
Then you should go back to your table.
No. No, I can't leave you. I won't, not yet. Not until I've made you laugh, at least once.
Ha ha. Now go back to your table.
Oh, that's not a laugh. I mean a laugh from the heart. I know. I'm going to tell you a funny story. Now, wait a minute. Let me think of one. I've got it. Well, it seems that there were two Frenchmen who went to America.
On which boat?
On which... Oh, let's drop it. I don't think you'd care very much for that one anyway.
Probably not.
Here's a great one.
He notices Ninochka's flat, inattentive gaze.
Maybe it's not so good. Let's forget it. You like Scotch stories?
Never heard one.
Well, here. Two Scotchmen met on the street. And I don't know the name of the street. It doesn't matter anyway. One's name was McGillicuddy. The other one's name was McIntosh. McGillicuddy said to McIntosh, "Hello, Mr. McGillicuddy." McIntosh said to McGillicuddy, "Hello, Mr. McGillicuddy." Then McGillicuddy said to McIntosh, "How's Mrs. McIntosh?" And McIntosh said to McGillicuddy, "How's Mrs. McGillicuddy?"
I wish they'd never met.
So do I. Well, how's this one? Two men are looking at the moon. One of them says to the other, "Is it true that a lot of people live on the moon?" The other one says, "Sure, it's true, about 500 million. Then the first one says, "Whew, they must be pretty crowded when it's half moon."
With a sneer, he watches Ninochka impassively eat her soup.
So you don't think that's funny?
No.
It seemed funny to me when I first heard it. Maybe the trouble isn't with the joke. Maybe it's with you.
I don't think so.
Well, I'll give you one more chance. Here goes. When I first heard this joke, I laughed myself sick.
The workmen listen in.
Here goes. A man comes into a restaurant. He sits down at the table. He says, "Waiter, bring me a cup of coffee without cream." 5 minutes later, the waiter comes back and says, "I'm sorry, sir, we have no cream. Can it be without milk?"
The table full of workmen crack up while Ninochka stares down at her breadbasket. Leon folds his arms and glares.
Not funny, huh?
No.
Well, it is funny. Everybody else thought it was funny. Maybe you didn't get the point. I'll tell it to you again. A man comes into a restaurant. Did you get that?
Yes.
All right. He sits down at the table and he says to the waiter, "Did you get that?"
Yes.
All right. It isn't funny so far, but wait a minute. He says to the waiter, "Waiter, bring me a cup of coffee." And 5 minutes later, the waiter comes back and says, "I'm sorry, sir, we're all out of coffee." Oh, no, no, you've got me all mixed up now. Sits down at the table and says, "Waiter, bring me a cup of coffee." And 5 minutes later, that's it. He says, "Waiter, bring me a cup of coffee without cream." And 5 minutes later, the waiter comes back and says, "I'm sorry, sir, we have no cream. Can it be a glass of milk?" Oh, you have no sense of humor.
He tips back in his chair.
None whatsoever. Not a grain of humor in you. There's not a laugh in you. Everybody else laughs at it, but not you.
He leans way back and crashes to the floor. Everyone bursts out laughing. Leon sits up and glares at Ninochka's toothy grin.
What's so funny about this?
Shaking with laughter, Ninochka slaps the table. The waiter helps Leon to his feet and wags his finger at the amused patrons. Leon slicks back his hair, straightens his bow tie, and sits next to Ninochka with a serious frown. Ninochka purses her lips and suppresses her smile. Then Leon cracks a wide grin.
Ha 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 ha!
Ninotchka's frown bursts and her face breaks into a pretty smile. Later, in the royal suite, the Russians meet with their lawyers.
In addition to the arguments above enumerated for lifting this injunction, we wish to cite the decision of the High Court of Paris rendered in the case of Princess Marishka against the government of Montenegro on the 5th day of August, 1897.
Ninotchka listens with a faint smile.
In that case, with our present set of facts, we feel that the treaty between the Republic of France and the USSR should...
The lawyer removes his pince-nez glasses. Ironov and Bulyanov stare at each other.
I'm sorry, gentlemen. The other day I heard such a funny story. Still makes me laugh. It's very funny. Oh, yes, about this injunction.
The hearing is set for the 20th of this month.
That's 2 weeks from Thursday.
We did our utmost to have it set ahead.
I know, gentlemen. It's in the hands of the court. We're helpless, aren't we?
Yes, it is unfortunate.
There's nothing we can do. Why get excited?
We'll leave these papers with you for your further consideration. Au revoir, madame.
Au revoir.
The lawyers leave the Russians alone.
Well, that means another 2 weeks in Paris.
Too bad we have to waste all that time.
I acted on your suggestion and got in touch with the power and light authorities. Whenever you want to visit their plants, they are open to you.
Oh, yes. Power and light, yes, thank you.
There is something else which I know will appeal to you. A visit to the Paris sewers. They tell me it's extremely instructive.
Huh? Why don't you get a haircut, Bulyanov? You all look so wintry, comrades. And why do we always keep the windows closed?
She opens a large double window and leans on the sill.
Isn't that amazing? At home, there is still snow and ice in here. Look at the birds.
She smiles.
I always felt a little hurt when our swallows deserted us in the winter for capitalistic countries. Now I know why. We have the high ideal, but they have the climate.
Well, comrades, I don't think I need you anymore.
If there's anything we can do for you...
No, not a thing. Would you like to go out?
Yes.
Have you any money?
They nod sheepishly. Ninotchka takes some money from a drawer and hands Bulyanov one note.
Here are 50 francs.
Thank you.
Bring me back 45.
They nod in compliance.
Yes, of course. Goodbye, comrades.
Ninotchka smiles brightly at the three men as they file out the door. With quick steps, Ninotchka hurries to the door and locks it. She strides through the royal suite, each of its rooms decorated with elaborate gilt wall paneling and fine furniture. Ninotchka locks the bedroom door as well, then takes a key from her skirt pocket and kneels in front of a bureau. She unlocks the bottom drawer, then slides it open and gently removes the fashionable, cone-shaped hat. Ninotchka steps in front of a full-length mirror and slips the hat onto her head. From its flared base, the brimless hat tapers up like a funnel. Dressed in a plain, straight skirt and a drab blouse buttoned up to her neck, Ninotchka gazes at the stylish hat. She sits on a bench, then rests her chin on her hand and gazes at her reflection. Now, in his study, Leon paces while his butler tidies up.
Have you the time, Gaston?
It's 8:42, sir.
I guess it must be 8:42.
You seem to be a bit nervous, sir.
I am, Gaston.
If you'll forgive me, sir, ever since you met that Bolshevik lady, I've noticed a distinct change in you, sir.
Have you, Gaston?
Decidedly.
Yeah.
Yesterday, I was greatly amazed when I came from the market and found you had made your bed, sir.
Yes, and I felt better for it all day long. I felt as if I'd contributed something.
May I add, sir, it was with great amazement that I found a copy of Karl Marx's Capital on your night table, sir. That is a socialistic volume which I refuse to so much as dust, sir. I view with alarm the influence over you of this Bolshevik lady.
But I don't follow you, Gaston. Isn't it about time that you realize the unfairness of your position? You're being my servant. Wouldn't you like to stand on an equal footing with me?
No, sir.
Oh, good heavens, isn't there any revolt in you? Sometimes when I order you around, don't you feel like kicking me in the pants?
No, sir.
Ah, you're a reactionary. You can't tell me that you don't look forward to the day when you can come in here, stand square on your 2 feet and say, hey, you Dalgo, from now on it's share and share alike.
Emphatically not, sir. The prospect terrifies me. Don't misunderstand me, sir.
I don't resent your not paying me for the past 2 months, but the thought that I should split my bank account with you, that you should take half of my life savings, that is really too much for me, sir.
Go to bed, little father. Go to bed.
Gaston leaves the room. In his tuxedo, Leon straightens his bow tie, then strides to the front door and opens it. Ninochka steps in, gazing at Leon with a sheepish smile. She wears the cone-shaped hat from the shop window and a stylish, wide-belted dress. With a gaping grin, Leon looks her over, then kisses her hand.
I don't look too foolish.
Foolish? If this dress were walking down the boulevard all by itself, I'd follow it from one end of Paris to the other. And when I caught up with it, I'd say, wait a moment, you charming little dress. I want you to meet Ninochka. You two were meant for each other.
Still admiring her outfit, Leon escorts her into the study and slides shut the double doors. Smiling to herself, Ninochka sets down her slim clutch handbag on the desk. Leon goes to her side and takes her gloved hand in his.
Remember this room?
I've never been here before. I wonder whom you're thinking of. Oh, I know, the girl with the map. Always figuring out each step and worrying about north and south. Mm. Today, now this might shock you. I walked up to a taxi. I said 88 Rue du Bois, and here I am.
You see, life can be so simple.
For 12 francs, 75.
12.75 from the Clarence? Son of a gun made a detour. But he got you here.
They glance at the clock, and Leon tries to kiss her.
It's 9 o'clock.
That's when one half of Paris says to the other half, what are your plans for this evening, madame?
First, I would like to take off my hat. Then, could we have some music?
A wonderful idea. Radio or records?
Not radio. Let's have music that's just for ourselves.
He opens the lid of a console.
I'll play it very softly, because I have things to tell you about which I can't shout.
Leon sits close to Ninochka on a deep leather love seat.
Darling, I...
He gives her a sudden, soft kiss.
You see, I couldn't shout that.
Oh, Leon. Leon, you know the jokes you told me a few days ago? I wake up in the middle of the night and laugh at them. You know that's wrong. They aren't funny. They're silly. They're stupid. But still, I laugh at them. And when I look at Bulyanov and Ironov and Kupalsky, I know they're scoundrels and I should hate them. Then I realize who made them like that. And instead of sending my report to Moscow, I go down and buy a ridiculous hat. And if this keeps on, am I to talk at you?
No, go on.
Leon, I want to tell you something which I thought I would never say, which I thought nobody ever should say, because I didn't think it exists. And Leon, I can't say it.
She bites her lip. Pulling her close, Leon kisses her deeply. They draw apart, gazing into each other's eyes. Ninochka smiles brightly and throws her arms around Leon's shoulders. She gets up and sits behind the uncluttered desk. Taking a small mirror from her handbag, she casts a coy glance at Leon, then rubs lipstick onto her thin, delicately arched lips. Leon grins.
What a gesture for a sergeant.
Leon, may I ask you something?
Anything.
If you don't want to answer, you needn't. But if you do, you must tell the truth.
I promise.
Did you make any change in this room?
I don't think so.
When I was here before, I noticed a photograph of a woman on the desk in a wide silver frame. I thought, what a waste of silver. That's all I was interested in then.
Now I would like to know what happened to the woman.
With a thoughtful frown, Leon meets Ninotchka's gaze, then paces to the other end of the desk. Sliding open the top drawer, he reveals the large, silver-framed photograph. Ninotchka takes it from the drawer and gazes at Duchess Swana's softly lit face.
The Grand Duchess? She's very attractive. She has great elegance. She's what you call a woman of the world, isn't she?
Ninotchka, I love you.
I suppose she's very entertaining. Must be lots of fun to be with a woman like that, so witty and...
Ninotchka, you're jealous.
Mm-hmm. Leon, don't ever ask me for a picture of myself. I couldn't bear the thought of being shut up in a drawer. I couldn't breathe. I couldn't stand it.
Oh, darling.
Ninotchka presses her cheek to Leon's as they embrace. In the empty dining room of an elegant restaurant, waiters lay out clean tablecloths and polished silverware. The manager answers the phone.
Café de Lutèce. A table for tonight? You certainly can't go. What time, may I ask? After the opera. Thank you very much.
Later, a maitre d' meets the Grand Duchess Swana at the door.
Good evening, Your Highness.
Good evening, Louis. You seem to be very crowded this evening. Can you manage a table near the floor?
Certainly, Your Highness. This way, please. Count Dalgo made the reservation this afternoon.
Count Dalgo?
Yes, it is only a small table, but we will put in some extra chairs.
No. That's another party. Why don't we go to some other place? It's so crowded here.
No.
This is glory. At last, I'm going to have a look at that female Bolshevik. Can you manage another table?
Only one in the rear, I'm afraid.
That's perfect.
You mean Leon's bringing the Bolshevik you told us about?
Isn't it divine?
I wouldn't have missed this for anything in the world.
Now, we must be very discreet. If she sucks her soup or drinks out of a finger bowl, I don't want anybody to laugh. We mustn't embarrass poor little Leon. He's gone through enough for myself.
The tuxedoed waiters seat them.
Satisfactory, Your Highness. Is it to be dinner, Your Excellency?
Oh, later, perhaps. We'll just start with champagne.
Du champagne.
I'm only afraid the doorman may spoil all our fun. If only he lets her in.
Look, there's Leon.
Where?
Leon paces outside the ladies' powder room. The Grand Duchess grins. The powder room door opens, and Ninotchka steps out, wearing a white organdy gown with glittering trim framing her bare shoulders. Swana's grin disappears.
Good evening, Count Alcou.
Good evening.
If you please.
They follow the manager to their table. Swana watches.
General, shall we dance?
At Leon's table, a waiter pours two glasses of champagne.
Is it dry?
Yes, monsieur.
Is that right, or do you prefer it sweet?
Oh, I wouldn't know. The closest I ever came to champagne was in a newsreel. The wife of some president was throwing it at the battleship.
It's always good luck to launch something with champagne. A battleship or an evening.
It's funny to look back. I was brought up on goat's milk, had a ration of vodka in the army, and now champagne.
From goats to grapes. That's drinking in the right direction.
They tap their glasses together in a toast. Ninotchka raises her glass to her lips and cautiously takes a sip. She smacks her lips and frowns. With a firm shake of her head, she swallows. Then her sour face disappears, and her eyes widen at Leon.
Good.
Mm-hmm.
She eagerly gulps down the champagne, emptying her glass. Leon watches with a bemused frown, then prepares to pour her another glass.
From what I've read, I thought champagne was a strong drink, but it's delicate. Does anyone ever get drunk on this?
Well, there have been cases. But the headache the next morning's worthwhile if you drink it with the right toast.
Leaning closer, he raises his glass.
To us, Ninotchka.
Smiling, she touches her glass to his. On the dance floor, the Grand Duchess watches over the General's shoulder.
Thank you, General.
Leaving the dance floor, they pass Leon's table.
Hello, Leon. How are you, my dear?
Hello, Swana. Good evening, General. How do you do?
Oh, you're looking magnificent tonight, isn't he, General?
Yes, thank you.
Is this your new dress suit?
Yes, Swana.
Didn't I tell you Benson and Benson were the tailors for you?
Yes, Swana, you
a
did.
Dream of beauty. He never takes my word for anything, but I was right, wasn't I?
Yes, Swana.
Oh, am I interrupting?
No, not at all. Your Highness, may I present Comrade Yakushova?
How do you do?
How do you do?
General Savitsky, how do you do?
How do you do?
Oh, I have some wonderful news for you, Leon. It's about Punchy. Do you mind if I sit down?
No, no, please.
General, would you mind making my excuses at our table?
Certainly.
You say I'll be back in a few moments.
She sits at their table.
Well, Leon, we can be proud of our Punchy. He had a triumph at the dog show. He won another blue ribbon and bit the judge. I bought him the loveliest little sweater as a reward. You should see him strutting down the street in it. He looks like a little boulevardier. You see, Count Dalgo gave me Punchy for my birthday. You must have searched for weeks before you found anything as divine as Punchy, didn't you, Leon?
Months, one.
Oh, poor Madame Yakushova, here we are talking in mysteries. I'm sure you wonder what it's all about.
Not at all. I understand perfectly. Count Dalgo gave you a dog. You made it very clear, Madame.
Oh, dear me. I must be losing my finesse. If I'm not careful, I'll be understood by everybody.
A charming crowd here tonight, isn't it?
Well, I'm going, Leon. But before I go, I must compliment you on your gown, Madame Yakushova. Is that what they're wearing in Moscow this year?
No, last year, Madame.
Isn't it amazing? One gets the wrong impression of the new Russia. It must be charming. I'm delighted conditions have improved so. I assume this is what the factory workers wear at their dances?
Exactly. You see, it would have been very embarrassing for people of my sort to wear low-cut gowns in the old Russia. The lashes of the Cossacks across our backs were not very becoming. And you know how vain women are.
Yes, you're quite right about the Cossacks. We made a great mistake when we let them use their whips. They had such reliable guns.
Will you do me a favor? Let's not talk about the good old days.
Yes, it's a very wise suggestion, Leon. I'm afraid Madame and I will never agree. The only thing we have in common is our lawsuit. And that will be settled next week. I understand everything will be over by Thursday. Am I right?
Yes, you're right, Madame. It'll all be over by Thursday.
It's too bad you have so few more days here in Paris. Now, Leon, be sure and redouble your efforts so that Madame can take some pleasant memories when she returns to Moscow. Good night. Good night, Leon.
Good night, Swanna.
He rises for her, then sinks back into his chair.
Now I think I need a glass of champagne.
Still frowning, he takes the bottle from an ice bucket and fills her glass, then fills his own. Taking a long sip, Ninotchka lets her shoulders relax and lets out a deep breath. Leon takes her hand and squeezes it.
Quickly, please tell me one of your funny stories.
A funny story?
Mm-hmm. You never finished the one about the two Scotchmen with the names.
Oh.
Please.
Well, there were two Scotchmen.
Uh-huh.
One's name was McIntosh, and the other was McGillicuddy.
Uh-huh.
They met on the street.
Uh-huh.
No, I'll tell you another story. A much better one. The only thing that'll be over on Thursday will be the lawsuit. There'll be no Thursday for us, next week or any other week. I won't let it happen. I'll tear it out of the calendar. Isn't that a good story?
Wonderful. If one could believe it.
You must, darling.
Gazing into his eyes, Ninotchka lifts her glass.
To the loveliest story I ever heard.
They each take a long sip. Letting her arm drop slowly to the table, Ninotchka sets down her glass. Her head rolls to the side. Then she straightens up.
Let's dance.
Stepping into the crowd of elegantly dressed dancers, Leon leads Ninotchka in a slow waltz. She gazes at him with heavy-lidded eyes and smiles. Gliding to the middle of the floor, they whirl around.
Oh, Leon, something is the matter.
You just made that trip from goats to grapes a little too quickly.
Everything is so wonderful. It's getting farther and farther away.
What, darling?
Thursday.
Yes, don't worry. Everything's going to be all right.
Ninotchka stretches out her arms.
Comrades, comrades.
Darling, darling, please.
I want to talk to my brother.
Shh.
Don't shush me, please. I am the people.
The other dancers smile.
I want to overthrow the Grand Duchess.
Ninotchka, you can't do that.
Oh, comrades. The good people of France.
No, Ninotchka.
Oh, but they're all Grand Duchesses here. I want to have thousands of Grand Duchesses,
yes,
and I want
yes,
to tell
yes,
them.
Yes, dear, you're quite right.
Yes,
but first of all, you're going through that door, you're going to lie down and take some spirits of ammonia.
Oh, no speech?
No speech.
Oh, I love you, my little Leonichka.
And I adore you, Ninotchka. Go ahead now.
He guides her to the powder room door.
No speech?
No, for heaven's sake, no speech.
As she slips into the powder room, Leon wipes his forehead and strides away to the bar.
Give me a double brandy.
Yes.
A bevy of women in formal attire emerges from the powder room, frowning. En masse, they seek out the manager and surround him. At the bar, Leon downs his brandy in one gulp. The manager approaches him.
I'm very sorry, Count Algu. It is most embarrassing. But the lady you brought with you tonight is spreading communistic propaganda in the powder room.
What? Give me another double brandy.
That kind of propaganda is bad anywhere, but inciting the attendants of the powder room to go on strike. Well, if she succeeds, the consequences will be disastrous.
Well, what can I do about it?
She has been asked to leave the powder room, but without success. We would appreciate it very much if you would see to it yourself.
You want me to go in there?
I'm sorry, sir, but I must insist.
The manager leaves, and Leon empties his shot glass in one quick motion. Wincing as he swallows, he heads for the ladies' powder room. As he reaches the door, it swings open, and a matronly lady steps out. Eyeing Leon coldly, she pulls the door shut and stands solidly in front of it. Leon strides back to the bar.
Making a triple brandy.
Yes, sir.
Later, Count Rakonin, the hotel waiter, opens the door to the royal suite for Ninotchka and Leon.
All right, tell the Grand Duchess. Tell everybody. They know it anyway. It doesn't make any difference. Go on, get out.
Don't tell them where we're going.
No, darling, nobody...
Rakonin leaves.
Are we going to build our little house?
Yes, a little white house.
No, not white.
All right, we'll make it red.
No, let's not have any color. No color, just the house. Let's form our own party.
Right. Lovers of the world, unite.
Oh, we won't stretch up our arms.
No.
We won't clench our fists.
No.
Our salute will be a kiss.
Yes. A kiss. Salute.
He plants a big kiss on her lips.
I'm so happy. Oh, I'm so happy. No one can be so happy without being punished. I will be punished and I should be punished. Leon, I want to confess.
I know. It's the Russian soul.
Well, everyone wants to confess, and if they don't confess, they make them confess. I am a traitor. When I kissed you, I betrayed a Russian ideal. I should be stood up against the wall.
Would that make you any happier?
Much happier.
All right.
Leading Ninotchka across the room, Leon stands her against an ornate wall panel. He removes a cloth napkin wrapped around a champagne bottle and ties it around her head like a blindfold. As she stands obediently, he kisses her once, then takes wobbling steps back to the table where the champagne bottle stands. He peels off the foil and untwists the wire around the cork. Ninotchka slides down the wall and lands in a heap on the floor.
I've paid the penalty. Now let's have some music.
Let's turn on the radio.
Radio? What's radio?
Radio's a little box that you buy in the installment plan. Before you tune it in, they tell you there's a new model out.
Oh, yes. I know what that is. There's one around here somewhere. It has a little knob that you turn.
A little knob, that's right.
Yeah, maybe it's in here.
She wanders into the next room.
Yes. Knob. Now, maybe it's in here.
No.
Let's see. There it is.
She points to the safe.
There's a knob. Now, what should we get? The news?
No news. We don't want to know what's happening in the world. We want to be left alone, don't we?
Yes, darling. All by ourselves.
Then turn to the left and stop at 7.
Leon turns the safe's combination lock.
Stop at 7.
The door swings open, and they peer inside.
No music.
No music.
There it is. Thursday. You can't rip it out of the week.
She opens the leather box, revealing the jewels.
There they are. They're terrible things, those jewels.
Oh, but
big.
They are the tears of old Russia. See that stone?
Who cried that one?
Tsar Peter gave it to his wife, Catherine the Great. For it, he sold 10,000 serfs in the market.
Oh, but darling, don't get impatient. Wait till we're married. You know that worthless butler of mine? That reactionary? Someday I'll come home to you and I'll say, darling, I drove Gaston to the market this morning and, ooh, look what I got for him.
He holds a diadem.
Let me put this on you.
No, no, no.
Yes.
No, no.
You will teach these jewels. For the first time, they will learn how they can really look.
They belong to the people.
And I give them back to the people.
He crowns her.
I make you Ninotchka the Great, Duchess of the people. Grand Duchess of the people.
Is this the wish of the masses?
It is their wish.
Thank you, Leon. Thank you, masses. Can I make a speech now?
Please.
Comrades, people of the world, the revolution is on the march. I know. Bombs will fall, civilization will crumble. But not yet, please. Wait, what's the hurry? Give us our moment. Let's be happy. We're happy, aren't we, Leon?
Yes, darling.
So happy. And so tired. Oh.
She hangs limply in Leon's arms. He kisses her on the forehead, then scoops up her legs and carries her into the bedroom. Passing a marble table and a chaise longue, Leon lays Ninotchka on her bed. The jeweled diadem sparkles in her soft brown hair. He leans over and kisses her gently on the lips. Then, teetering on his unsteady legs, he steps back and regards her. Shuffling away, he glances back at her, then steps out the door. On the bed, moonlight streams across Ninotchka's face as she sleeps, her lips curled up in a smile. She stirs and glimpses the stern photograph of Lenin on the bedside table.
My little father. Smile.
Lenin's downturned lips stretch slowly into a smile, and his eyes brighten. Daytime. Outside, traffic circles the Place de la Concorde, and a clock reads a quarter to 12. In the royal suite, Ninotchka lies on her bed, asleep, and still wearing her gown.
Come in.
She holds her forehead. At the door, a maid shows in the Grand Duchess Swana. Wearing a dark, trim-fitting overcoat and a small hat topped with poofs of netting, she goes to the bedside.
Good morning. What? It's tomorrow morning. Tomorrow noon, to be exact. I hope you will forgive me. I know it's extremely cruel to awaken anyone at such an hour.
Ninotchka sits up.
Don't you recognize me? I'm the Grand Duchess Swana.
Frowning, Ninotchka adjusts her gown.
As I know exactly how you feel, my dear. The morning after always does look grim if you happen to be wearing last night's dress. Don't be embarrassed by my presence, though. You couldn't have found anyone more sympathetic to your condition.
I think we can cut your visit short. Leon is not here.
Of course not, my dear. I didn't come here with any such suspicion. How ridiculous. Nor did I come here to pick up his hat.
It lies on the floor.
What is it you people always say, regardless of what you mean? I'm delighted to have you here. I haven't reached that stage of civilization. Therefore, I must ask you to leave.
Leave? That's exactly what I came here to ask you to do. Leave. I don't mean this hotel, and I don't mean Paris. I mean France. There's a plane for Moscow at 5:40.
Do you still think you're issuing orders from your palace in Petrograd?
My palace in Petrograd. Yes, you took that away from me. You took away my Tsar, my country, my people. Everything I had. But nothing more.
People cannot be taken away, madame. Neither 160 million, nor one. Not if you have their love. You hadn't. That's why you're not in Russia any longer. And that's why you came here this morning. Problems were never solved by bowing from a balcony.
Oh, my dear, you don't know how impressive I could be. Did you ever see me in my regalia with my diadem and all my jewels?
Ninochka touches her head. The diadem is gone. In the next room, she swings open the door to the safe and scans its empty interior. Rushing back to the bedroom, she picks up the phone.
Elise, 2763.
Believe me, Leon can't help you. He doesn't know anything about the jewels. I give him my word. I swear it.
Where are they?
You were very careless with our precious jewels, my dear. They're too expensive a toy for two children to play with.
Where are they?
Don't worry. Fortunately, last night, a very trustworthy friend kept his eyes open. He may have overstepped his function as a waiter, but he fulfilled his duty as a Russian.
She reveals a brooch.
I just put this on for sentiment. The rest are absolutely safe, I assure you. But if you feel like notifying the police...
You leave me no choice.
Won't it be rather embarrassing for a Soviet envoy to disclose the circumstances under which she lost them?
I'll have to face the consequences, but so will you. Don't forget they'll ask you how you got them.
That's very simple to answer. They were given to me by my mother. They were given to her by her mother. In fact, they're mine. You can't steal what belongs to you.
They always belong to the Russian people. They paid for them with their blood, their lives, and you'll give them back.
I told you we had plenty to talk about. Shall we sit down? Now let's free ourselves from emotionalism and try to solve the problem in a practical way. Our situation has considerably changed. Before, I had only a claim to the jewels. Now I have the jewels.
In other words, moral ideas have no weight with you. All right, then let's deal with legal facts. You know that France has recognized the Soviet.
Unfortunately.
Under the Soviet law, the jewels belong to the state. France is going to uphold it on the ship.
Yes, my lawyer agrees with you. He says that France will uphold it in every court, but... I will drag you through every court. Don't forget that. And when I say it will take 2 years, I am, as always, conservative.
Won't those 2 years in court be expensive for you? I know that money was no object as long as you could squeeze it out of the pockets of the people. But now?
I may run out of money, but you have already run out of bread. 2 years is a long time for your comrades to wait.
I see. You've calculated it in terms of hunger.
No, I just wanted to be absolutely impartial. Both of us are faced with two rather uncomfortable years. We can condense those 2 years to 2 minutes, if you want to accept my proposition.
Go on.
I am willing to hand over the jewels and sign any necessary papers if you will take that 5:40 plane to Moscow.
That's not the way to win him back. Not Leon.
I think I know Leon quite as well as you. Perhaps a little better. Leave that worry to me. Now, 5:40 leaves you time enough to close the deal with Monsieur Mercier. But, naturally, you'll be too busy for any farewells. I will see to it that everything is done in the most expeditious manner. And I will also see you to the airport. That's my proposition, Comrade Yakushova.
Ninochka looks past the Grand Duchess with a stricken gaze. Turning slowly, Ninochka strides to the phone. Swana's eyes dart nervously.
Yes? Oh, hello.
Swana rises and steps across the room to a window alcove. Ninochka waits.
Yes, Leon? No, you didn't waken me. I'm fine, thank you. Yes, oh yes, it was wonderful. For luncheon?
Swana glances back at her.
I'm afraid I can't. I have lots of things to attend to today, Leon. I'm going to be very busy. Well, to tell you the truth, I'm a little tired and I would like to rest. Maybe you're right. Perhaps it is the champagne. For dinner? Of course. 7 o'clock here. 7 o'clock will be all right. Come in. Yes. Just a moment.
She goes to the door.
You can leave it here.
Yes, ma'am.
A bellhop sets a 3-foot-wide arrangement of flowers on the floor, then leaves. Ninochka pulls an envelope from the arrangement and eagerly opens it. As she reads the note inside, her breath quickens and she smiles. Neat script fills the second page. Sweetheart, I have kept my first promise. I sent poor old Gaston to the market this morning, and if you will look deep into the flowers, you will see what I got for him. Wide-eyed, she reaches into the arrangement. She pulls out a bottle with a label reading, "Goat Milk for Health." Smiling tenderly, she sets it on a table and picks up an extension phone.
Operator, will you switch to call, please? Darling, your present just arrived. It's very silly and very wonderful. What? I won't forget 7 o'clock. Goodbye, darling. What? Oh, salute.
Trembling, she hangs up the receiver. Later, at Swana's apartment, a young maid opens the door for the Grand Duchess.
Good afternoon, Jacqueline.
Good afternoon, Your Highness. Madam, I...
Yes, I know. You didn't find my other glove. Well, it's all right. You're forgiven.
Thank you, Your Highness. Count Delgu is waiting. He's been here some time.
Oh, Count Delgu. Yes.
Handing the maid her hat, she primps her blonde curls, then breezes into the next room.
Oh, Leon, darling, how nice. Have you ordered tea or cocktail?
No, thanks, Swana.
Did I act stupidly last night? Should I apologize?
No, I'm the one who should apologize. I should have talked to you before.
Is this by any chance going to be a confession?
Yes.
Oh, no, 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 my little vulgar boatman. Have you forgotten our first commandment? Never complain, never explain. Now, it's worked so often and so perfectly in the past. Let's not break the rule. And please don't look so guilty, otherwise...
Swana, just this once. I must ask you to listen to me.
All right.
They sit opposite each other.
I'm listening.
I know you hate the obvious, but you mind if for the moment I'm not the least subtle?
Brutal frankness, if you insist.
There are 100 ways of approaching it, but I feel it can best be said in one simple phrase. I'm in love, Swana.
Oh, I thought it was something serious. Oh, how could you frighten me so?
It must be serious. Not so long ago, I'd have considered such a statement juvenile and rather middle class. Now I can say it without a stammer, without a blush. I'm in love, Swana.
But Leon, this has the ugly sound of regeneration.
I'm afraid that's what it is, Swana.
Always late. Same old trouble, Leon. Whether you're taking me to the opera or calling for me at a beauty shop, you're never on time. And now when it's a question of your reform, late again. By about 5 minutes.
What is this, Swana?
Well, knowing the efficiency of the French air service, I think I can safely guarantee that Madame Yakushova has already taken off for Moscow.
Has done what?
She's gone, Leon.
You don't expect me to believe that.
There's the telephone. If you call the hotel, you'll find you have no 7 o'clock appointment.
Beyond the Eiffel Tower, a plane ascends in the sky. On board, Ninotchka sits with her three comrades.
Imagine... For once in our lives, we were in Paris, and we never went to the Eiffel Tower.
That's right.
They tell me it has a wonderful restaurant on the second floor.
Yes, it is an amazing piece of engineering. Still the most remarkable iron structure in the world.
She smiles faintly.
Leading to the top, there is a staircase of over 1,000 steps. But there is an elevator included. In the price of admission.
Her smile disappears, and she closes her eyes. In Paris, Leon strides into a Soviet tourism office. A man behind a counter hands papers to a woman with a fur stole.
Well, everything is in order. I hope you will enjoy your trip to Russia, madame.
Thank you. Oh, by the way, I've heard so many rumors about laundry conditions in Russia. Is it advisable to take one's own towels?
Certainly not, madame. That is only capitalistic propaganda. We change the towel every week.
Oh, thank you.
Hello? Comrade Katsavin? No, I am sorry. He hasn't been with us for 6 months. He was called back to Russia and was investigated. You can get further details from his widow.
Leon gapes.
Very welcome, very welcome.
Pardon me, I was interested in what you were just saying. You mean when an envoy goes back to Russia and they don't like what he's done, they put him out of the way?
Not always. Look at me. I've been back twice.
Here's my passport. Please give me a visa. I must leave for Russia immediately.
Count Leon Dalgu. A count, a nobleman.
Don't hold that against me, please.
Why should an aristocrat want to go to Russia?
Business.
What business?
Private.
There is no private business in Russia. This whole thing seems very suspicious. What is the real reason? If you ever want to get into Russia, take my advice. Confess.
Listen, I'll be absolutely frank with you. I have no business in Moscow.
I think so, too.
I want to see a friend of mine, a very dear friend. It's a personal matter that has no relation to social philosophies or politics. It's a girl.
So it is love which drags you to Moscow?
Yes.
No visa.
But I must get into that country of yours.
Oh, no, no visa.
But that's impossible. You can't do it. You haven't the right to... Listen, if you don't give me that visa...
You're going to force us, huh?
Look here, you advertise all over the world for people to go into your country, and then when somebody tries to get in, you won't let them.
Why should I take a chance?
On what?
How do I know you don't want to blow up a factory?
What for? Why?
Or a tunnel, or a bridge.
Oh, suspicions. Nothing but suspicions. That's the trouble with you. Listen, if you don't let me in, I'll stand in front of this office of yours and warn people to keep away from Russia. I'll picket your whole country. I'll boycott you, that's what I'll do. No more vodka, no more caviar, no more Tchaikovsky, no more borscht. Now, wait a minute, I've got a better idea than that.
What?
He decks him.
And you can tell the Kremlin that's just the beginning.
No visa.
In the Soviet Union, hundreds of workers march in a parade.
Comrades of the world! Never has there been such a May Day parade as this!
A flatbed truck displays a 10-foot picture of Stalin. On another float, four workmen stand in front of a large, realist sculpture of a gear. Dozens of women follow, wearing identical berets, white blouses, and straight skirts. In the middle of the group, Ninotchka marches, grim-faced. Later, Ninotchka enters a once grand townhouse, crowded with people. Crossing the lobby, she nods to a comrade, then heads upstairs. Children play on the steps. On the second floor, two women wind yarn as they chat. Off the hallway, Ninotchka passes through a small room where a woman mops the floor. In the next room, a young woman practices her cello.
Good afternoon, Anna.
Good afternoon, Ninotchka.
Aren't you late?
No, the opera starts an hour later tonight on account of the parade.
Didn't you march today?
They didn't let me. I'm in disgrace. Last week at the performance of Carmen, I played a sour note. The conductor got so excited, he yelled, "There is sabotage in the string section."
Ninotchka sets a small table.
Too bad, Anna. You missed an inspiring day.
Yes, I know. Are you expecting someone?
Few friends. Just a small dinner party.
What are you serving?
An omelette.
An omelette? Aren't you living a little above your ration?
I saved two eggs. And each of my friends is bringing his own. We'll manage.
Just goes to prove the theory of our state. If you stand alone, it means a boiled egg. But if you're true to the collective spirit and stick together, you've got an omelet. That reminds me. Have you heard the latest they're telling about the Kremlin? Well, one minute. I'll tell you later.
A stocky man with a dark mustache steps in and lumbers across the room, staring straight ahead. He steps into another room and shuts the door.
Ah, that Gurganov. You never know whether he's on his way to the washroom or the secret police.
You should be more careful, Anna.
And you too, Ninotchka.
About what?
Oh, ever since you have been back from Paris,
I haven't talked to anyone about Paris. I haven't said a word.
That's just it. It makes people feel queer. And I don't want you to get in any trouble.
I have nothing to hide.
You should. I'll show you.
Anna holds up a silk teddy.
When I passed through the laundry yard today, I saw all the women huddled around this. So I brought it up here. Things like this create a bad feeling. First, they didn't know whose it was, and then they saw the Paris label, and did it start a commotion? Some said it's what we all ought to wear, others said it's like hanging foreign ideas on our clothesline. It undermines our whole cause.
I see.
You know how it is today. All you have to do is wear a pair of silk stockings, and they suspect you of counter-revolution.
Thank you, Anna. I'll dry it up here when I wash it next. I should hate to see our country endangered by my underwear.
Ninotchka. I'm your friend. You can trust me. Did you bring back anything else?
No. I left everything in Paris. I just happened to be wearing this.
Tell me, what else did you have?
Well, a hat.
What was it like?
Oh, it was very silly. I'd be ashamed to wear it here.
As beautiful as that. What else? Come tell me.
An evening gown.
An Evening gown?
Yes, it's a dress you wear in the evening.
What do you wear in the morning?
When you get up, you wear a negligee. Then you change into a morning frock.
You mean to tell me you wear a different dress for different times of the day?
Yes.
Now, Ninochka, you are exaggerating.
No, it's true. That's how they live in the other world. Here we dress to cover up our bodies, to keep warm.
And there?
Sometimes they're not completely covered, but they don't freeze.
Oh, they must have wonderful materials to make a thing like this. So soft. Something you don't even see.
You feel it, though.
Ninochka, I wouldn't bring this up if we weren't such good friends.
What is it, Anna?
You know, I told you that Pavlov and I are going to get married when he comes back from the maneuvers. Mm. Would it be asking too much if...
You want this?
Just for the honeymoon.
It's yours for good.
Ninochka, Ninochka. Thank you. Thank you very much. I'll never, never forget it, you darling. Am I going to play that cadenza tonight?
Anna rushes out, clutching her cello. Smiling to herself, Ninochka wanders across the room to a radio console topped with a round speaker. She turns a knob.
Individuals? Yes.
She turns it again.
Soviet Russia. And 13 million peasants. 85% of the population.
Into an automobile and the mujik into a tractor. And then let the capitalists try to keep...
Ninochka shakes her head, her lips curling into a sad smile.
No music.
The three comrades step in.
Ninochka!
How are you, three scoundrels?
Well, we are back home.
You know what they say? There's nothing like home.
Yes, and we might as well face it.
No, you mustn't talk that way. You must adjust yourself. Let's be brave.
Brave, that's right.
Let's be happy that we are all alive.
That's something we owe to Ninochka. If you hadn't given Commissar Razinin such a wonderful report about us, who knows what would have happened?
I can tell you exactly.
Comrades, let's forget everything except we're together.
Yes, let's do that.
It's a real Paris reunion.
If you close your eyes and listen to our voices, we might be in Paris.
Let's not close our eyes. There are many good things to see here, too.
Look how nicely she's arranged the table.
Yes, how nicely. What a wonderful room you have here.
How many families live here with you?
Only myself and two other girls. One is a cello player in the opera and the other is a streetcar conductor.
Just three people in a room this size? Ooh.
Ulyanov looks at the radio, and Ironov fingers the tablecloth.
These are good material.
Naturally, it's not the royal suite.
Comrades, once and for all, we are in Moscow.
Yes, there's no doubt of that. Just look out of the window and there it is.
And it's great. Think what it was a few years ago and what it is now. It's a tremendous achievement. You must be reasonable, comrade.
She is right. Anyhow, let's talk ourselves into it.
All right.
It's great. It's...
Buryanov goes to the window.
Wonderful. Just see how happy the people look from here.
Can you blame them? At least the May Day parade is over.
That's another thing. It's spring.
The same spring we had in Paris. Just as good.
Even the swallows are back.
Really? Yes, that's right. Maybe it's the same swallow we saw in Paris. Mm.
Yes, it is, Ninochka. It is. He must have been in Paris. You can see it in his whole attitude.
He just picked up a crumb of our black bread, shook his head and dropped it.
We must be patient. Finally, we got the spring, didn't we?
Oh, let's forget the future. Let's stop being sentimental. Let's start that omelette.
That's
oh, yes.
Right. Here is my egg.
And here is mine.
And here are mine.
Bulyanov searches his pockets, then pulls out his hand, dripping with yolk.
Comrades, I'm out of the omelette.
Don't worry, that'll be enough.
Of course, come on.
They surround Ninochka as she cracks the eggs into a bowl.
Come, Ninochka, let's make it in real Parisian style.
Let's give it the confiture de brie.
Bulyanov, the neighbor, steps out of the washroom. They eye him as he crosses the room. He leaves, shutting the door behind him.
A man like that. All he has to do is walk through a room and the omelette drops.
Later, Ironov strums a guitar.
Paris, I still adore you.
Topolsky dances around the table.
Paris, I'm longing for you.
Why, oh, Paris?
A stout woman wearing a uniform steps in and takes off her shoes. Then Gulganov appears again with a little boy. As he goes to the washroom, the stout woman draws a curtain around her bed. Ninochka and her friends stare at the table, smoke curling up from their cigarettes. They glance toward the roommate's bed, then at each other. Now an elderly man steps in.
Comrade Yakushuva, here the postman left his letter for you.
Thank you, Vladimir. Thank you.
She takes the small envelope. Scanning the address, her eyes widen. She flips it over and reads the back.
What is it, Ninochka?
Ninochka, what is it?
From Paris.
From Paris?
The bill?
From Lyon.
Lyon? Who is he? Tell us.
They crowd around her at the table. She starts to open the letter, then looks up at her three comrades. Exchanging glances with each other, they go across the room and sit on Anna's bed. Smiling, Ninochka tears open the envelope, then pulls out a folded letter. As her eyes scan the page, her smile fades. Across the room, Kapolsky, Ironov, and Bulyanov watch with concerned frowns, then approach her. Ironov leans forward.
Bad news?
She hands Ironov the letter, and the other two read over his shoulder. The letter begins, Paris, April 23rd. Ninochka, my darling. Below the greeting, all the lines are blotted out with a thick marker, and a stamped word reads, censored. Ironov turns the page and reads only the signature. Yours, Leon. Ninochka slouches at the table, her eyes downcast.
Well, I think it's getting late.
Good night, Ninochka. Thanks for a wonderful dinner.
Ironov takes his hat from Kapolsky.
Good night, Ninochka.
They shake hands.
Good night.
Bulyanov heads for the door, then turns back.
They can't censor our memories, can they?
No.
Sharing a smile, they shake hands firmly, and Bulyanov leaves. Ninochka sits at the dimly lit table. Behind her, the curtain encloses her roommate's bed. Ninochka slumps forward, cradling her head in her hands. Now snow falls on the city of Moscow. In an office, a man with slicked back hair and a pointy goatee sits at a desk. He wears a simple gray uniform.
Come in.
Ninochka steps in, holding a portfolio. Her face is impassive. She approaches the desk, her lips drawn in a grim line.
Good morning, Comrade.
Good morning, Comrade Commissar. Here's my report on the materials available for trading in the next 4 months.
Does it include the products of the Far Eastern provinces?
Yes, it does.
You mean you have finished the whole investigation?
Yes.
That's marvelous. You must have worked day and night. Don't you ever sleep?
I need very little sleep. We must be extremely careful what goods we take in exchange. I have already started a survey on our most urgent needs.
Well, Comrade, I'm afraid you have to turn over that work to someone else.
May I ask why?
Please sit down.
Thank you.
Now, Comrade, have you heard from your friends Kopalsky, Bulyanov, and Ironov?
No.
I haven't either, but I've heard about them. You must realize it was only on the strength of your Paris reporter that I sent them to Constantinople. Without that, I never would have trusted them on a mission as important as a fur deal.
May I ask what has happened?
If I told you what's going on in Constantinople right now, you wouldn't believe it. They are sitting there, those three, for 6 weeks and haven't sold a piece of fur. This anonymous report was sent me. They're dragging the good name of our country through every cafe and nightclub. Here.
He reads.
How can the Bolshevik cause gain respect among the Muslims if your three representatives, Bulyanov, Ironov, and Kopalsky, get so drunk that they throw a carpet out of their hotel window and complain to the management that it didn't fly? Unbelievable.
Ninochka suppresses a grin.
They shouldn't do such things. Are you sure this report's correct?
Naturally, I want to verify it, and that's why I need you.
She stands.
You want me to go to Constantinople?
Yes, leaving immediately.
I appreciate your confidence in me, but I must ask you to entrust someone else with this mission. I should hate to interrupt my present work. I'm positive my survey is more important than finding out whether three of our comrades have been drinking some extra glasses of champagne.
That is for me to decide, Comrade Yakushova.
I'm sorry. I don't want to overstep my position, but please don't send me. Please, comrade, let me stay here. Let me finish my work. I'm in the rhythm of it now. I don't want to go away. I don't want to be sent into that foreign atmosphere again. Throws you out of gear. Let me finish my work. I've concentrated everything in it. Please, don't make me go.
Don't waste my time, comrade. Do your duty. Goodbye.
I shall do my best.
Now, sun glints off the sleek body of a twin-engine plane as it navigates above the clouds. At an airport, 24 people gather in front of a wide, arching hangar. In the middle of the well-dressed group, Kapalsky, Ironov, and Bulyanov stand together. Ironov wears a top hat and a tailcoat, and the other two comrades wear bowlers and dark suits. Kapalsky holds a large bouquet of roses. Suddenly, they look up to the sky. Later, they show Ninochka into an airy suite. The living room opens onto a balcony enclosed with Moorish archways. Kapalsky grins.
How do you like it, Ninochka? Isn't it wonderful?
Tell us.
Bolyanov, Ironov, Kapalsky.
Oh, please, Ninochka, don't start figuring it out in cows.
You've done it again and I'm responsible. How can you forget yourself this way? You were sent here to make money, not to spend it.
Bolyanov, she still has those old-fashioned ideas.
High time she got out of Russia.
Comrades, I must be stern with you.
That's our old Ninochka.
Yeah. Don't forget that day will come and you'll have to face Razinin.
Good old Razinin. Is he still alive? How does he manage?
Comrade.
Friend. She puts her arms around their shoulders.
Friend. Imagine we don't have to whisper anymore.
No, we can say whatever we want. We can shout. We can complain. Look.
Ironov strides to the door and flings it open.
The service in this hotel is terrible. See? Nobody comes. Nobody pays any attention. That's freedom.
That's bad management.
Is it possible to bring you back to reality for one moment? I must have a complete report of your negotiations and a detailed expense account.
No, Ninochka, don't ask for it. There's an old Turkish proverb that says, if something smells bad, why put your nose in it?
And there is an old Russian saying, the cat who has cream in his whiskers had better find good excuses.
With our cream situation as it is, it's Russia that should apologize to the cat.
Well, I don't know how I can get you out of it this time. How will it end?
Shall we tell her?
Yes.
Ninochka, I hope you'll be our guest.
Guest?
Yes. We have opened a restaurant.
A restaurant?
We have a wonderful electric sign. Dine with Bulyanov, Ironov, and Kapalsky.
You mean you're deserting Russia?
Oh, Ninochka, don't call it desertion.
Our little restaurant, that is our Russia.
The Russia of borscht, the Russia of beef stroganov, of blinis and sour cream.
The Russia of piroshki. People will eat and love it.
And we are not only serving good food, we are serving our country. We are making friends.
Who gave you this idea? What's responsible for all this?
There is something in Constantinople. Something irresistible?
It's in the air. It may come around the corner when you walk down the street.
It may step out of a bazaar. It may be waiting for you in a corridor. It may hide in the shadow of a minaret. And right now it's on the balcony.
Ninochka's eyes widen. On the balcony, Leon steps forward and shakes his head.
They wouldn't let me in, so I had to get you out.
Still staring, she steps toward him and clutches his hands.
Leon.
Ninochka.
So you're behind all this. I should have known.
Leon lifts her hands to his lips. With devilish grins, Kapalsky, Bulyanov, and Ironov turn and amble toward the door. Halfway there, they sneak another glance, then hurry out. Leon stands face to face with Ninochka, his arms wrapped tightly around her.
Trying to keep me away from you. As though that were possible. Naturally, I couldn't go on forever punching passport officials in the nose. But I found a way, didn't I? Oh, darling, I had to see you. I wrote and wrote, and all my letters came back to me.
And the one I got, they wouldn't let me read. It began, Ninochka, my darling, and it ended, yours, Leon.
I won't tell you what came between. I'll show you. I'll prove it. But it'll take a long time, Ninochka. At least a lifetime.
Oh, but Leon, I'm only here for a few days.
All right. If you don't stay with me, then I'll have to continue my fight. I'll travel wherever there are Russian commissions. I'll turn them all into Ironovs, Bulyanovs, and Kopalskis. The world will be crowded with Russian restaurants. I'll depopulate Russia. Comrade, once you saved your country by going back, this time you can only save it by staying here.
Well, if it's a choice between my personal interest and the good of my country, how can I waver? No one shall say Ninotchka was a bad Russian.
Darling.
Now on a sign, light bulbs spell out, dine with Bulyanov, Ironov. The words and Kapalsky are unlit. Below, Kapalsky wears a sandwich board reading, Bulyanov and Ironov, unfair to Kapalsky. Fade to black. Words appear. The end. This film has been described for blind and visually impaired audiences by Descriptive Video Service, WGBH Boston. Described by Brian Gould and Christina Faust. Read by Peter Haydu. Funded by the U.S. Department of Education. For more information about DVS, call toll-free 1-800-333-1203 or write to our email address, dvs@wgbh.org.